If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the series. Hopefully you're already subscribed. If you're not, all right, hit that subscribe button right now. You're going to get new interviews just like this one every single week. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from as well. We've had some great guests here. In fact, talked to a lot of the cast from Alien Earth, the new series on FX, including Timothy Oliphant, Sidney Chandler, David Risdahl, director and showrunner Noah Hawley. We had Devo drop by, Mark Mothersbaugh and Jerry Casale. We talked with DJ Shadow, the Black Eyed Peas, Genndy Tartakovsky. He's the legendary animator behind Dexter's Laboratory and Samurai Jack and Star Wars Clone Wars. He's back in a new Netflix film called Fixed. We talked with Amy Berg, the filmmaker behind the new documentary It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley. They Might Be Giants were just here. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a special rewind episode. We're looking back at three of my interviews with my friend Wayne Coyne, the mad scientist you'd get if Willy Wonka ran a psychedelic rock band. He's a co-founder, frontman of the Flaming Lips, a group that's been turning confetti cannons, hamster balls, songs about mortality into art rock theater since the early 80s. Wayne started out as a fry cook at Long John Silver's before trading hush puppies for hallucinogens, steering the Lips from underground weirdos to Grammy-winning weirdos with albums like The Soft Bulletin and Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, known for his childlike sense of wonder and his knack for making even a song about death sound like a sing-along. Wayne Coyne's as likely to show up on stage in a spacesuit as he is to drop an album packed inside a gummy skull. In short, a true psychedelic ringmaster who made weird go mainstream. And I've been very lucky to have him on my show plenty of times. I'm going to focus on three interviews for this Rewind episode. And we're going to start back in 2013, just as the album The Terror arrived. Wayne and I talked about the band's darker sound for that record, the nude stage show that accompanied it, the balance between artistic obsession and personal life. He went on to reflect on legacy, the myth of the rock star persona, and why the Flaming Lips fans expect and even thrive on change. So here is part one of this special Rewind episode. Kyle Meredith with Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Hello, Kyle.
It is great to have you here.
All right.
Louisville, forecast of 2013.
But you should say, yeah.
On the mighty Ohio River.
Yeah.
The messy Ohio River.
Yeah, it doesn't usually look like that, does it?
It takes a flood to bring in the nastiness, to bring in the ugliness.
But, well, it looks bad, but it's mostly just a bunch of limbs and wood. It's not a horrible amount of trash.
It doesn't have the legendariness of like the Mississippi, but you know, we're proud of it.
Well, I thought it was the Mississippi. It's so big. Yeah. But there's a family of ducks right down there. There's some little babies and stuff. So it's not as hazardous as it may look.
Yeah, they're living fine.
They are.
They're living fine.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into 2013 here. Well, heck, I mean, the whole thing. I think you guys have one of the amazing careers of consistency.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you.
You don't.
Maybe we should stop. I know we think about that all the time. Of like,
I don't know that you. I don't know that you have to. That's not really a criticism or anything. But I don't know the way things go. You know, bands take off a second, but it doesn't seem like you guys ever do. And I don't know. It feels like you almost have to be a madman to pull off this kind of lifestyle.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think. You know, there is something too when you get down when you talk to artists, mm-hmm. and I don't mean necessarily that bands aren't artists, but you know the way that artists work is a lot. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of it's just like every day you get up and do this thing, and that's how.
But it's something you would do anyway.
It is. But you know, people think that. They wrongly think that you sit around and wait for some inspiration and then you go and do it, you know. But you can't, you know. There's oxygen right there. But you just got to get up and do your thing all the time.
Right.
And I think if something happens, if luck hits you, then you can really roll with it. And part of it is I think I'm just really obsessed, you know, because I'm not doing music all the time.
Sure, no, you've got all the projects.
All kinds of stuff. Right. And people are in my studio all the time, and I'm kind of producing and all that sort of stuff. And I love all that. So, and the way that we play, you know, we kind of are always playing, but we're never playing for like 6 months in a row.
Right.
You know, like some groups will go out and they'll play for forever, and then they'll take forever off. Mm. And I don't know, about 5 years ago, we stopped doing that just because it became, I mean, Stephen has a couple of kids that are really still pretty little, and so we decided that we would just treat it like we work down the street at Target or McDonald's or something.
After three decades, you know, of doing that and an amount of hits, I'm not sure you have to anymore either.
Well, so. I think for some people it makes a lot of sense because they go out and they play everywhere and then you don't see them for a couple of years. Or it's just the way you get the machine geared up.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of equipment and a lot of guys and a lot of stuff that has to be, you know, taken around. But I think we're just lucky that as we went, you know, we own all the stuff. We have our own big warehouse. And I think it's just luck that it's worked out that we're kind of like a family circus. We go out and do the thing when we want to, as opposed to the demand of the touring schedule. But I think that sort of schedule sometimes really can defeat groups. You know, because it's just a long, long commitment. And it's not always that much fun, and people get sick, and there's drugs and things involved, and so it can be a struggle.
I think bands are learning that too. You mentioned something a minute ago, kind of like the way you know a fan's perception of you guys would be, and there's something about that too, because they do have these expectations of what you're doing, and who you are, and what all this is, and there's got to be a point where I guess it's the performer versus your own person. I mean, you're the front man.
I don't think so. For me, it's all the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. I don't really go up there or even sit here with you and think, well, I've got to be this dude. I mean, I'm just
so there's never an act that it ever goes into it. I mean, you're a creative person on top of it, so
no. I think if you're lucky, you know, the things that you're doing and the person you are and all that, I mean, they are the same thing, and I think that's why it's this. I mean, I I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but I mean, this is just what we do.
Sure, sure. I guess it's the theatrics of the whole rock star, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I know what people mean. I mean, I've been around people who, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's a air of pretending in the whole thing, you know, or there's image about it. But I don't really think we are about that anymore.
I guess Bowie comes to mind a little bit on that. You know?
Yeah, but, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know, he kind of has a thing. And that actually brings up another fine point. You know, once again, 3 decades in, you're going into the 4th decade as the Flaming Lips. You know,
I think
most artists, you know, at some point you'll lose their creative streak. And, you know, and Bowie comes to mind as something that doesn't. Whereas the Stones, you know, oh, you want a new song? We're just going to write Start Me Up One More Time differently. And you guys have bypassed that entirely.
Right. I think in defense of anybody out there, I mean, I'm sure they're just doing what they like. And I think everybody's entitled at some point to say, you know, hi. All right. You know, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm not doing it because I think it's making the world a better place or it's progressing the world of ideas along. I'm just doing it because I want to.
Sure.
And I think I'm hoping that that's what everybody does. Yeah. And especially someone like a Mick Jagger or Keith Richards. I mean, I hope that they get up when they're 70 years old and say, I still like playing music and what does it matter? And I don't think what we're doing is different from what they're doing. They're probably doing what they like, same way we are, you know.
Well,
but I think we're really lucky that we do have this curiosity about what is out there. What do we want to do?
Well, you don't have to do the same thing over and over.
But I think
you stayed away from.
I think we're lucky that the thing that we've never been mega successful, and so I can understand where it would be very tempting for, you know, any group, if someone came up and said, you know, the thing that you do it so well that you can make $1 million a week doing it. But if you change, you might not make And you would probably say, well, gee, you know.
That $1 million sounds nice.
Yeah, I could be a little unsatisfied and make $1 million. And so, I mean, and those aren't things you could judge before it happens. So for us, we've done things here and there where we thought, well, we'll take the money as opposed to doing what we want. And it was just so horribly unsatisfying that we wouldn't do it again. But no one has come up and said, we'll give you $1 million either.
Sure.
So we'll see.
Well, The Terror is a great example. The Terror, the brand new record, of you guys really changing on a dime whenever you want to. I mean, it kind of started with the record before this, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think every review I read, it seems like everyone's kind of crutching on one thing with The Terror and saying, it's a dark record.
Well, yeah,
it
and I can understand.
Dark record, because you're the one in it. You're the one who's living the record. You're the one who's singing the record. Do you see it like that?
Well, I think we discovered a couple of, you know, different ways of recording. We have this little synthesizer that we got from Sean Lennon. We were at his studio, and we started playing around with it. And I think part of its appeal, this little synthesizer, it's a really old synthesizer, is that you play notes, and accompanying the notes are these little tritone electronic, you know, sort of after effects. And for musicians, you know, this is it's beautiful because a lot of times nowadays it's easy to get pure notes. Everything's already in tune. You can just hit things. And part of your brain really loves when the world is in harmony.
Sure.
You know, that's why harmony even exists. It's like, oh, that goes so well with this.
This is the mathematics of songwriting, the science of songwriting.
Well, or just that you can, when you hear it, you like it.
Sure, right.
You know what I mean? But part of what this synthesizer would keep telling us is that, yeah, this is working on one musical level, but on another musical level, it wasn't working at all. But it really appealed to us. And I think it was affecting, you know, whatever part of our brain was not wanting perfect harmonies or whatever. And it didn't make us write the songs, but it urged us to write these types of songs that I think we're dealing with that kind of gray ambiguity of the way your life really is.
Sure.
And I think that's why people relate to it so much, because, I mean, I'm not putting
it
down, but
it's a beautiful record.
Well,
in the oddest sort of way.
Right. I mean, we would say that ourselves.
It's like a
Kubrick
film.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's like a Kubrick film.
We'd say it's like our most depressing but most triumphant record.
Yeah.
I think we've done.
Yeah.
Because it's not it's not cartoon-like in its reach. It's not saying, oh, everything's going to be beautiful forever, you know. It's really saying, yeah, you know, beauty is here and pain is here. And, you know, but I don't want people to think that our lives have gotten so dark and so painful. I think it's just there's an urge to make this kind of music when those sounds happen. And we hadn't really done music. We hadn't really embraced that much of that type of music. I think we wanted to. We like it.
Well, there's something about that too, because when a fan listens to the record, there's a big character study that goes along with that. This is how we get to know you. This is how we get to know you.
Well, exactly, yeah.
And when it's, you know, whether it's the lyrics are autobiographical and everything, there becomes that line where you're saying, this is how much I want to let out there before it just becomes gossip.
Well, I don't think of it like that. I mean, I'm sure if I was Beyonce or someone like that, there could be a lot more of that going on. But I don't think of it like that. I think the best thing I can do is just to be completely me and be, as you know, be honest or whatever that is. Because sometimes, you know, you're coming up with a song or coming up with lyrics, and you don't really know what the fuck you're gonna say. I mean, there is no, you don't sit there and know everything you're gonna do and write it down. You just will say something that we say that it comes, you know, it sort of squirts out of your subconscious or whatever. But on the other side of that, these things squirt out of you, and you still get a chance to choose whether you're going to keep it or dismiss it. And there's a really great line on the record, and I say great because I just sort of, I didn't really think of it. It just sort of happened, where it says we don't control the controls. And part of that is, I believe it's true for my life, that there's, you know, an element of what I do is that I feel like I should control it, because if I control it, it'll go this way and it'll go that way. But then I also know that if I control it, it becomes virtually the same thing every time, because I'm not really aware of all the little nuances of what I do. So I don't want to have control, because there's no surprises left. There's no new path, you know. So it's a quagmire, you know. You, like all artists, I'm probably a dictator at heart, and I want to rule the world.
But it's your art, you know.
Well, it starts out that way, but then I think sometimes our most beautiful stuff that we do is that we see things in the world and make it our art. And that's probably more true for what we want now. I think in the beginning, when you have no control, you think you want it all. And then when you, like the way our life works now, when you can control it all, you don't really want to. Kyle, what am I going to do?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
well it is a great new act for the Flaming Lips. It's even almost like amnesia, because, you know, like we recognize the face, it kind of sounds the same, but there's nothing else about it that's real. And for, you know, for a fan, listening to you guys, that's important. Like, something new to feed on.
Well, I think our fans, I wouldn't say for all groups. I think some groups, if they went too radical, would probably lose everybody. Yeah. You know, but I think our fans, most of them are artists themselves. They're people who are in bands themselves. They're making music. They're involved in some thing about art and music. And yeah, I think, because I think what it says to them is, like, you know, maybe someday you're going to want to change.
Yeah.
And you want to see that there's examples of people out there that said, they did it, I can do it. And yes, it's scary, and you don't really know if it's going to work. I still don't know if what we're doing now works or if it doesn't work.
Be written about in the rock history books.
Well, no. thank you.
Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror, every lyric coming into this.
Well, thank you.
Wayne, it has been so awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Everywhere this whole thing goes, we're going to be on board. So.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you. Yeah. And let's hope it worked out that the river didn't rise
wash
up.
Wash us away.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal.
all that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
All right, welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith, a special Rewind episode. Three of my interviews with Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips. Now we're going to, it's just a year after that that previous interview in 2014, when we got backstage at the Hangout Music Festival, right after The Terror and the release of With a Little Help from My Friends. We got to talk about celebrity collaborations with Miley Cyrus and Kesha, using social media to demystify the band's process and what it meant to digest pop stars through the Flaming Lips' psychedelic features, as well as their cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, working with Sean Lennon, how the project benefited Oklahoma City Animal Charity, all that. Part two of this special Rewind episode. It's Kyle Meredith with Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips.
All right, good to see you again. You are kind of like the busiest man in rock who's not promoting an album. And that seems to always happen for you. Dude doesn't... You
know, well, I guess, you know, in promoting albums now, it does... I mean, we put out a lot of stuff.
Right.
You know, I think it's still true for some big acts where you put out a record and then you tour the world for 5 years and then you know, you get together and you put out another one. But really, even starting a couple of years ago, we just weren't... It wasn't that we didn't even really want to do that anymore. For us, it just got to be a little bit... I guess boring, you know, and whatever we wanted to do more in that time, we would just start to do it. And it got to be more manageable for us anyway, to put them out when we felt like it, as opposed to getting in line in the slot.
Doing the campaign.
With the big major label and all that, you know. That's part of the things that we didn't like about, you know, being on Warner Brothers all the time, is it's this giant machine and takes, you know, 6 months just to get anything going, you know. And I think little by little, I think the way that we worked our contract and stuff like that, I think really suits us now that we do a lot of stuff.
And it's fun to watch. It's fun to listen about. Do you ever, because the stuff you do isn't all the normal stuff, do you ever get worried that the story is bigger than the music? Because there's a lot to write about with you guys.
No, not really. I mean, to me, I mean, music without all this other stuff sometimes is just, it doesn't have, you know, it alone doesn't have the personality and all this stuff that, I mean, there's a lot of groups that I'll hear their music and not really get it until you see them or you read something about them or they're involved in something. You see a little bit more into what they're about. So, no, I think all that is wonderful. I mean, you know, one of the most... what did we say, public groups out there ever would be a group like the Beatles, and I would say for my own taste, you know, the more that I knew about them, the more I loved them.
The more you got to get,
And you really understood what their music was about and their art was about and all that. So I never fear that, but I'm not really trying to do that. You know, sometimes I just think to talk about music is really kind of, you know, it's just not, it's kind of dumb.
Right.
You know, we're really...
You can't tell me where it comes from. None of that stuff.
Well, it's like no one really is going to talk about notes and amplifiers
and
chords, you know, and recording studios. I mean, really, in a sense, that's not really what music is. Music is this life.
Yeah.
And this is something you get to listen to that tells you something about the life. So, yeah, I mean, I would say I live a lot of... Yeah. I live a lot of life, yeah.
It's a good it's lifestyle,
great.
Yeah.
It's great, yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
There's one thing you've been doing that is really interesting. I won't call it downtime. It's not a downtime. You wrote the April Fool's note about celebrity, or April 1st note.
We
call it April Fool's, but April 1st note about celebrity. Yet you've really kind of positioned yourself with celebrity this whole time. Contradiction is not the right word.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, the way they presented it was this.
I mean, we're talking about Kesha and Miley and all of that, right?
Right,
now,
but I mean, some of comedy now is so close.
Right.
When you're in it, you can see it really is so close that it is almost true at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I mean, I know the power of these silly things like Twitter and Instagram, and you know, anybody can go on there, and if they want to make a story out of it, they can, and they don't really have to call you up or be a publicist or anything now. And I like that. You know, I think it was probably, you know, 3 or 4 years ago at least, when I noticed that people were doing that in the newspapers and the, you know, the little free entertainment things around Oklahoma City. They wouldn't really do an interview with Lady Gaga, but they could write articles about her all day because
it's all right there.
It's on her Twitter and Instagram, so it must be true, you know. But I thought that was great because you could just start to say, I think this is interesting today.
And
I'm doing this, and if you're interested, you can see what I'm doing. And I think with a group like the Flaming Lips, I think seeing how we do it and seeing what we started to do, and then 3 weeks later, here's what it ended up being. You know, for an, if you're an artist, especially a young artist, wondering how do you do stuff, I think it'd be wonderful to follow
us. Just to have that whole thing.
Yeah, because we started to do this, but then that didn't work out. And it's great to be able to change your mind. And, you know, you're not a fool if the idea didn't work out. You know, that's what all art is. Yeah.
Do you think we it's good that we have more of a two-way conversation with the artists, that artists are as accessible? Because there's, in a sense, a bit of mystery going. You know, Beatles, Zeppelin, they all had the mystery. Pink Floyd, they had the mystery. You could imagine beyond their human... you know,
I suppose, but I don't know. You know, the
but
artist,
I mean, someone can tweet at you and you can answer back, and they've had a conversation,
which I think is great,
right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, if I really love an artist, I mean, I want to know as much as I can about them, you know, and you want to know what they did. I mean, I think it's interesting to know what they did on these days. I mean, when those big books came out, finally, you know, probably in like, when was it, the early 90s. That sort of documented every day that the Beatles were in the studio.
Oh, right.
These were revelations to people.
Yeah.
You know, and you really got to see it. They did this in the morning, and then that night they finished Strawberry Fields Forever.
Right,
it's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think that at all. I mean, I think I'm putting it out there because I feel this is the life that our fans have given me. And I don't waste them. I don't throw it away, and I just say, look, this is what I get to do every day, and I'm going for it, you know.
With the, I want to bring that back up, the two names I said a minute ago, with Miley and Kesha.
Yeah.
I think you're doing something really interesting, maybe unintentionally here, about taking pop, these stars that make pop, musicians that make pop, filtering through the system of the Flaming Lips, and when they come out, they're different. Kesha, you know, she had a very public moment where she kind of derailed for a second, got herself back up on her feet.
Yeah.
Miley, you know, if you weren't a fan of her music, now you guys are working with her. That's positive that you could be a fan of her. What I'm seeing
is there's
this moment where the Flaming Lips are eating pop stars, digesting them, crapping them back out into something psychedelic and way more interesting than before.
Well, that's a great compliment. Thank you. But, I mean, it's mostly on their. They're the ones doing it.
Right.
I mean, I could never call up Kesha if she didn't want me to call her and say, hey, we should do this. I mean, they're the ones, you know, that are saying, hey,
coming
we should
to you.
Do this.
Yeah. You become their spirit animal.
I hope so, yeah. I mean, but those two, more than really some others that I've worked with here and there, I mean, they're absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Fearless, badass.
I mean, I'm really curious to see how this Miley stuff comes out, because this could be completely different for her. This could be a shock to her fan base.
I don't think so. I mean, I've seen them, and I the same thing I would tell Kesha. It's like, they love you.
Yeah.
Music is just what they're hearing, you know? And this idea that it's got to be a certain way, I'm like, no, they love you. And if you do it, and you put yourself into it, and you love it, I bet they'll love it too.
Yeah.
You know, and not try to be like, well, I got to be number one. It's like, you're already number one in their hearts.
It's not that right.
And if you really do this through love, and I think that's what real artists want to do. I mean, if you don't get to evolve through your art and through your music, you'll just go insane.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have the desire to evolve, you'll try to do whatever you think is going to work. But if you have a desire to evolve, like Miley and like Kesha, you don't want to do the same music you did last year, even if it's the biggest record in the world. You are already moving on. Same way the Beatles or Radiohead or any of these groups, it's like you're living in your music. It isn't just something you do so you have money at the end of the day. And I see that in them. They're not, I mean, it's not, they're not doing it as a career move.
Sure.
They're doing it because it's like, I love this. And Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful.
Fantastic. You know? Yeah. We mentioned the Beatles a couple times too, and that's where I want to end because you're doing with
we are and
the so whole Beatles album. Or,
so we've done these. You know,
right.
We have our
Pink
own
Floyd and yeah.
And I have my own studio, and a lot of bands come through, and a lot of my friends, and sometimes you know. I sort of put it to them like, you can record here, do whatever you want, but you got to give me a song. And we've done, we did one of my favorite records, a record by King Crimson, The Court of the Crimson King, just a little record that we do with our friends. We had done the Stone Roses first record, where we all get together and people do different songs. And I had planned on doing Sgt. Pepper's really about 3 years ago.
Which is a perfect record for you guys to do.
The zaniness that you
can inject into it that I kind of imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so we had planned on doing it anyway. And then over the New Year's Eve, shows that we were doing two nights, and we decided the second night that we would do a kind of Lennon Beatles set. Mm-hmm. So if you were there both nights, you'd see us do our Flaming Lips set, and then that second night you'd see this extended set. And we kind of accidentally worked up this really fantastic version of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Yeah.
And it had got out there on YouTube, and people had seen it a bunch, and the David Letterman people were doing... I mean, this was all just coincidence. We really had not considered that the Beatles were doing this 50-year thing or anything. We were just doing it because, obviously, we love John Lennon and the Beatles or whatever. And I think it had gotten out there, and they asked us to do the Lucy in the Sky song on the David Letterman show, and we asked John Lennon to do it with us, and he jumped on. So it
is kind of an incredible moment there. If you're a fan,
I mean,
like,
are you kidding?
Look what I get.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. So he's doing such good stuff right now. That new record.
We've totally been with him through all these things that he's really trying to do. So it sort of just by coincidence became the Flaming Lips doing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Right.
And when it came time to do stuff with Miley, we had a couple of tracks of our own that she was working on. We were working on songs together. And she was curious about, well, aren't you doing this Sgt. Pepper's record? And I was like, yeah. She's like, I'll be on it. So we had the track already ready, and that's why it was easy to say, because we did four or five things all in one short day, and we did that track, and we did the Day in the Life track with her. And, I mean, people don't realize, I mean, she's so into what she's doing. And these things are like one take.
Right.
You know, we would be there as long as we thought we needed to be, but she just sings the song and it's like, well, it is. That's great.
So for you guys then, what, you know, is it just for fun? Is like, this is something fun? Are you trying to get something new out of those albums, or, you know?
Well, I mean, for people that love music and you can listen to the way that they record, and we do our own recordings, and we have producers that help us and stuff too, but a lot of it's, you know, it's initiated by us doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, any artist, any musician, if you delve into that stuff and you're really going, what are they doing there? I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
There's a simplicity that people think, oh, it's just this and that. But there's a magic to it that isn't so obvious.
You can't pull it off, but it makes you a better musician in the end.
Well, it makes you go, oh, my God. They didn't just do the simple thing.
Right.
They did this and they did that. And it's quirky. There's mistakes. They don't always sing on key. They don't always stop. You know, there's all these things that people take for granted as being like, well, these people know what they're doing. It's like they didn't know what they were doing, and they went for it anyway. And that's what I love about it. Every time we delve into music, you see these little, you learn something about it. It's great. And that music is so wonderful anyway. I mean, you could not run into someone who loves music that isn't going to love that music.
And now you're a part of that album's history in a way.
Well,
it's in a stretch, but you know, I mean, maybe even it's just a Wikipedia page, but now you're part of that album's history.
Well, I love it.
Yeah.
And I mean, but part of the idea of being attached to Miley Cyrus and My Morning Jacket and these other groups is that I want, especially I saw stuff that people know so much about the Beatles, that if these weirdo groups do it, it'll get more attention. And part of it is the charity thing that we're doing in Oklahoma City, this volunteer organization that helps all these homeless animals, dogs and cats in Oklahoma City. I mean, they're cool people. It's all volunteers, and they help low-income families with their vet bills, which, you know, that's one of the big dilemmas. It's like, you just don't have $3,000 to go get your...
To go and do that, right?
And so I know that if we do this Beatles music, a lot of people will probably think we're, you know, stepping on sacred ground. But I think it'll be interesting to people.
Yeah.
And I know if we get these artists doing it, And I can say absolutely it's done out of love. Yeah. No one's doing it. Everybody's doing it for free, volunteering right. all their time, all their effort. So it isn't, no one's doing this to become more famous or to make money. And secretly, all the money is going to go to this little place. And I want
it's
it to be...
not so secret anymore.
Well, I want it to be in Oklahoma City, because I right. want it to seem like there is a lot of things that are out there that are trying, in a sense, to change the world. And that's great. It's a difficult thing. But I know, with just a little bit of concentrated effort, this thing in Oklahoma City, 5 years from now, won't be there. And we can say, hey, man, Wayne's friends...
did that.
They helped us do that. Yeah. That. Yeah.
It's so awesome, great. Man. Yeah. It's fantastic. Well, thank you yeah, so yeah. much for giving the time.
For sure, yeah. Yeah.
And I can't wait to see what's next.
I know. Well, me neither.
And we'll be right back right after this. All right. Welcome back. Kyle Meredith, now the third in this trilogy of this Rewind special episode, taking us to 2019, when the band had just released King's Mouth, Music and Songs. It was an album born out of an art installation, a children's book, and finally a full-blown concept record narrated by Mick Jones of The Clash. And Wayne and I got to talk about how the project lined up with him becoming a father, writing songs that could live in both whimsical and darker places, and how listeners' perceptions, like seeing Trump in the title Giant Baby, often reshaped the band's work. Part 3, Kyle Meredith with Wayne Coyne of The Flaming Lips.
Hello, Kyle.
It was great seeing you all again here in Louisville at the Bourbon and Beyond Festival. It's always such a great show that you put on, and that was another fantastic set.
Thank you. That was, it was. You never know what those things are going to be like. I mean, it's outrageous that it's that many people on that hot of a day. It's still Friday afternoon. You know, it's not, right. It wasn't the weekend yet. You know, like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, we've played quite a few of these things where maybe they're not giving it away anymore, but we used to play things where they're giving away a lot of booze during the day, and it's like, oh my gosh. But pretty fantastic festival. I mean, for Louisville, I mean, I sometimes think Louisville, people would think Louisville is just a little spot somewhere, and that's a great giant festival. That's amazing.
And we've had a few around here. I know you guys have played Forecastle in the past. I mean, there's a nice history there, so we're always appreciative.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Well, I also want to compliment you on the latest record with King's Mouth Music and Songs, which I've been listening to. You know, we're playing Giant Baby around here as one of the many tracks that kind of diving into. But I thought we'd kind of get into this record a bit as well, because this is not, I guess, what you'd call a typical album. I mean, even the narration itself makes something different, but there is a concept here, right?
Well, I think, you know, you saying that is exactly the reason why it would start to appeal to us, to be like, oh, well, let's make, you know, an actual narrative to the record. Oftentimes with our records, we know the secret narrative or the concept or the, you know, the subliminal story that's going on, which I think a lot of artists do. And then you just make songs that kind of are fun to listen to and people can sing along to. But, you know the real story behind them or something. But with this record, I think, you know, it started as that the art installation, which was really quite a long time ago now, 2014, 2015. And so, you know, this, it started to already exist as a creation. And then the curator at the very first art museum that we were installing it in, he encouraged me to come up with a little bit of a story, just so, you know, in a sense that the way the installation works is like 6 or 7 people can get inside of it. And at that time, it was about a 10-minute program. And so there would be people waiting outside to get in. You know, let's say if you had 100 people waiting, you know, you'd want there to be something else to do while you're waiting to get inside of this thing, you know. And he encouraged me to do these drawings and paintings, collage sort of things that are part of the album even now. That image that's on the cover is part of that. Mm-hmm. And to come up with a little bit of a narrative or a story. And all this, you know, just sort of happened. We didn't think about it too much, which is probably why it's endearing at all. You know, sometimes you overthink things, and we're lucky that this kind of happened. And so 3 or 4 years down the line, you know, we're making songs that kind of just go with this narrative that we made up, you know, back in 2014, 2015. And it felt very much like we're just making songs to go with a story that somebody else has already put in place, you know. So even though it was us that put it in place, it felt long ago enough that it was already established. And then we felt like, well, we're just making songs for that. And so I think that really helped us not get distracted and veer off the track. And then, of course, when Mick Jones came on board and did that great narration, which for me is such a great flavor to the album. I think that just, you know, that really sealed it as like, oh man, now we know exactly what we're doing. Once we had him, we, you know, we really pushed right ahead to finish it all up. It really changed the, you know, made it all seem more perfect.
Because it would seem like you, when you've got, you know, three different factions like that, a book, which would also come part of it, the installation that you're talking about, and then the record itself, it would seem like a lot of times there would be a challenge to make sure the songs could stand on their own out of concept. But I guess that's, I don't get that from you. Like, it almost kind of linked together. What do you call it when you deconstruct something to build it first, you know?
I would say the same thing, you know, going into it. But, you know, it is funny how music doesn't really need music and songs and stuff like that. They don't really need your help. You know, we always think, oh, we need to make it simple. We need to make it this. We need to make it that. You know, I think if a group of critics got together and analyzed the song Happy Birthday, they probably would say, you know, it's too simple. It's never going to work. You know, who's going to sing this dumb thing, you know? And it's just, you know, that's just the nature of music. It's just mysterious. And it's just kind of, there's things about it that you like that once you begin to think about them, you can't think why you like it. It's like eating your favorite food. It's not something you can think about. You know, you like it first and then you find a reason why you like it or dislike it or whatever later. And music is really doing the same thing. And so, you know, all along the way, I've always liked, even like the Beatles' Yellow Submarine, you know, it's somewhere along the way, it's implied that it's, well, it's a story and here's a little piece of the story. But I never thought of it very much as being connected or not connected. I just liked the song and didn't really think that much about what it was connected to or the rest of the story. I just thought, well, this is the song, you know. And so the things that have Mick Jones's narration on them, I mean, I sort of feel like his voice and just the tone of it and this gentle, eccentric warbling that he, you know, that he speaks with, to me, I just sort of feel like it's just another great sounding instrument that's in our music. And yeah, he is telling a story, and yeah, it does make sense, but you could also listen to it almost abstractly, you know, if you didn't speak English or something, and like it just for the tone that it is. So, you know, I try not to get in the way too much of what the music is capable of and not overthink it, you know.
I'll say as a side note, a bit coincidentally here, but Happy Birthday, the song itself, written by two sisters right here in Louisville.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, they're buried here too. Yeah, there's they ran a school, an orphanage school, and they wrote the song here, just about a half a mile from where I'm sitting.
Oh my gosh! And are they celebrated for this song? I mean, is that a notable thing that's like on their tombstones or something like that?
You would think it'd be celebrated more because that's more or less like the most famous song in the world. I mean, arguably, but more or less. They're not celebrated as much as they should be,
I speak about it all the time. It's like, you know, people do oftentimes delve into like songwriting and how, you know, what it is and how complicated it is and how brainy it is and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I guess maybe. But, you know, I point out Happy Birthday is one of the greatest songs ever written. It's one of the most useful songs ever written. And useful is a good thing for a song to be. We run into that a lot when people talk about our song, Do You Realize, being used at like weddings and the births of their children and funerals and things like that. And I'm like, I think it's a great, great thing that songs can be of use. You know, it's not just, oh, it's not just what the Flaming Lips want it to be. It goes out there in the world and it can be, people can use it for these things. And I think that's a great, great thing. That's amazing. As soon as we get done, I'll Google this song, Happy Birthday, and I'll find out a little bit more about it.
Yeah, please do. Well, you've said a couple things that makes an easy seg here, too, because you've also become a new dad, and congratulations on that.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, this whole thing, I mean, so it traces back, obviously, long before the birth of your child, but now it, you know, with this album being maybe the finished product of the whole thing, it seems kind of custom built for that world of you know, childhood stories, and especially in those trippier 60s or early 70s type of children's books that kind of went out there. And I did wonder, did that play into any of the actual album of the music?
Well, I think in the very beginning of making it, we did have, you know, an agenda of making it like a children's book, you know, meaning like if kids wanted to go to this King's Mouth installation, you know, because they really do love it, you know, and I didn't want it to be put off by parents that are thinking, oh, this is just too weird or too, you know, that's got some adult themes in it, which we've done that in the past. You know, oftentimes the Flaming Lips music sounds like it could be children's music, and then it's got, you know, all kinds of curse words in it and all kinds of stuff where it's like, well, it's made for like adult kids, you know, to whereas I think we were making a great effort to say this could, you could play this for your 10-year-old or 8-year-old and feel like it's working, or there, you know, you wouldn't feel too uncomfortable about it. So that was part of the agenda, even when it went in to its very first installation, you know, that was part of it too. It's like, we wanted it to be, families could come and everybody could like it and it wouldn't be awkward for anybody. So that stayed true to the album and the music and the lyrics and all that. And then I agree with you, you know, the timing of this album coming out, our little boy was born right at the beginning of June, and this album really came out kind of all around that same time, and it looks very much like a great coincidence, which, you know, it really mostly is. But I think, yeah, you know, as the last year was going along, yeah, there just must have been something, you know, that was a change that was occurring in me or something like that, where you have a desire to do something like this and stay with it. I mean, you know, oftentimes, you know, musicians and artists, you know, the desire you begin with can change 100 times and not be what it ends up being or whatever. And I think with this, as we were finishing it and as we knew we were going to have a baby, all that kind of helped focus it to be like, yes, it's this type of record. And I was glad that the two were sort of brought into the world kind of at the same time, because it let us talk about a lot of, you know, different aspects of being an artist and being a musician and making records and being a father and all those things that I've really never had to talk about before or had the opportunity to talk about before. So yeah, I think it's all great. It's all still mystifying and wonderful, you know, for me.
It's not to say that there aren't any, I guess, darker aspects that go along with this too, because maybe similar to Do You Realize, if I understand it right, a song like Mother Universe, you know, it talks about a death during a childbirth. And I thought, oh, I, you know, and here you are about to become a father. And I wonder if there's any connection there.
Well, right. I mean, I think any kind of, you know, active imagination can often go to the worst things possible and you can't get away from them. And I think music helps you in that way. It's like, songs really can confront, you know, unspeakable things with a sort of set of beauty and love that lets you embrace these ideas without having to think about them on your own, you know. And I think Steven and I, you know, the writers mostly of the Flaming Lips music, I think we've become more comfortable with singing about things like that and knowing that it's in a song, you know, and the subject and the lyric, they're sort of within this coloring and this atmosphere of care and love and understanding that I think helps us say those things, because they're all things that are kind of, they're deep within Stephen and I. I mean, Stephen lost his mother. I think he was just 10 or 11 years old, you know, and that's a pretty devastating time for a young, sensitive person who's going to go on to be an artist and a musician to have something like that happen to him. And you don't often know how much of that you can put into your music or how much is already there and you don't realize it or whatever. And sometimes when we're doing something like this, where it is sort of about the good bits of that, but also, you know, the sad bits of stuff like that, we just go with the flow. And I don't always know how it is going to affect the listener in that way. But I know, you know, parts of the way Stephen and I have lived or have grown up or whatever, you know, it's really very normal, you know, and a lot of times the things that we're singing about are a normal kind of sadness that most people eventually growing up are going to have and confront and have want to deal with or whatever. So I think that's part of the great, you know, acceptance and beauty of doing music like this is you sort of feel like, yeah, it's the way I feel about it, but I feel like it's not that far away from the way you would feel about it too. You know, we're all sharing these experiences in that way. But I think the Flaming Lips have a good emotional attack at songs. And so sometimes I feel like, yeah, we'll think about that. I think that can work and not feel ironic or not feel like a joke or not feel like something silly, you know.
And perception is a big thing about how a listener takes it. I will even go back, you know, I mentioned we're playing Giant Baby. When I first looked at that title, 9 times out of 10, if another artist wrote that right now, it was like, okay, that's the Trump song. I guess time and space means a lot to how we're going to be, what our perception of those songs are going to be.
Well, I would agree. And people have asked me, you know, honestly, like, is this in some way talking about Donald Trump? And I would say for Stephen and I, absolutely not. You know, I mean, I think if we were younger and we were in our 20s or maybe a teenager or something like Billie Eilish, you know, we would be inserting that stuff into our music because, I don't know, when you're younger, a year, 2 years or 4 years of a presidency is a major, major piece of your life. But for us, you know, we started to make this music before, I mean, Donald Trump's been around a long time, but before he was president, for sure, you know. And we'll continue to talk about it and listen to it long after he's gone. And I really have never thought in those ways that we would use Flaming Lips music in some way to be a secret, you know, combatant that's going to do this. I don't really feel that way. I feel like, you know, if the listener wants to tie that into it, of course, they can. But I would never, I'd never really sing about something like that. I would just go out and try to change it and then just write a song about, you know, about change. I would never write a song about someone like Donald Trump and leave it as a secret or something, you know. I mean, we actually have Donald Trump in a lyric from 2006 in the song called Free Radical. We were using his name and his image and kind of what he represented in the culture as kind of a put down. And yet, I mean, here we are. Now it's become a kind of reality. And yeah, so I mean, we weren't really protesting about him even then. We were protesting about what, you know, in a sense, what he represented even then. But I don't think it's his fault. I mean, I think some of it is that sort of selfish, you know, egotistical personality. I think he appeals to a certain American out there. It's always the way it works. You know, it's not really the person. It's kind of that they represent a character that's already, you know, a personality type that's already in the culture, and suddenly they're representing them and speaking for them. And so I don't always really just blame them. I mean, he has to be voted on. People have to show up at his rallies and people have to stick up for him. And so it's, you know, it's a funny thing. But I'd say for us, no. I mean, we're not inserting Donald Trump into that. But I could see where that title, Giant Baby, would think, oh, I think I know what they're talking about. And it's like, well, it's really just a funny title to use those two words together. I mean, and even in the lyrics we sing about that sort of thing. He is giant, but he's a baby. And yeah, it's more that we just think it's absurd.
Well, I don't want to leave it on that. I know we got to wrap up here. I will ask, I know there's some rumors already circulating that you're talking about the record, maybe even another record coming out next year. Is that in the works, or are we still thinking further down the road?
Well, we always have a lot of things going on. I mean, in November, we've got this long-awaited The Flaming Lips playing with the Denver Symphony Orchestra live at the Red Rocks Amphitheater there. That's finally coming out, though. It was recorded in 2016. And we have a couple of albums that we've recorded with some other people. There's a group, a duo of a guitar player and a drummer called Deep Valley. And these two girls came out about 2 years ago now. We started working on some music, and that record is going to come out. So it's kind of the Flaming Lips and Deep Valley. Not positive what we're going to call it yet. And that record comes out. And then I think by next summer, we have another Flaming Lips album. And it's really shaping up to be a great, great, really stumbled upon some great, great, unique songs and stuff. So I think that's going to be, we're still working on that. So working on that through October and November. We should know pretty soon if we'll be able to finish it in time. But but always a lot of things going on. I think that's just the way our life is. We're always recording. We're always writing songs, always making things up, and always being involved with other musicians and artists. It's just the greatest life you could ever think of, you know.
And you make it so fun for the fans, too. It's always so fun to be a fan of the Flaming Lips, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that every single time.
Well, Kyle, that's a great thing to say. Dang, thank you. That's a cool, cool thing. Thank you.
Wayne, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time today. And you know, have some fun out there on the tour. I'll be looking forward to catching the next date.
All right, well, cool. And I'll look up this happy birthday song. Thank you for enlightening me. All right, bye.
There you have it. Special Rewind episode. Flaming Lips, Wayne Coyne. My thanks, as always, thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here to keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week, just like this one.
at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give this series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s, the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from the Velvet Underground, the DBs, Tyler Childers, Imani Coppola, the Body Snatchers, the Selector, the Cramps, Chuck Prophet, Indigo D'Souza, Fiona Apple, Alt-J, and my interviews with Tori Amos, Vernon Reed of Living Color, and Rufus Wainwright. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. It's always at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary, while supplies last. Tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.